I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. I have the pleasure today of talking with Jane Garver. Jane, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. What's the most inspiring thing in your world right now?
That's a big question. Let's see. I don't know. It's hard to claim a superlative the most inspiring thing, but I have been inspired this whole year, especially by a lot of performance works that I've seen in Atlanta. A lot of dance. I've recently been enjoying the drag performances of Lavonia Elberton and how she is taking an established venue and putting her own mark on it, her own twist, sort of doing this darker version of a drag performance. And I recently, last weekend, saw Eric Thurmond and Mary Grace Phillips performing out of their studio, a dance work that I enjoyed so much that I went to both nights of it. I think as far as inspiration, I'm in a very short view about that, but I recently saw some very inspiring dance works, and I tend to look towards dance and performance, in thinking about my own sculpture.
Are you a dancer? Or do you like to dance? Maybe
I do like to dance.
All right.
I used to actually think I was going to be a dancer. I don't think that that's what I do, but I love dance, and I sometimes work building theater sets or dance sets. So I sort of circle around dance a lot. I'm a dance fangirl more so. Yeah.
What is it about New Orleans that really speaks to you, aside from it being where you were born?
Well, I know that I romanticize New Orleans a little bit because I go there to visit. I don't work there. I just kind of, I'm usually there with no schedule, but I do feel like there is a genuine friendliness and very slow pace of life. At my grandma's house, people just stop by. They'll just stop in. Like, you'll just see neighbors all of a sudden standing out in the yard, and people just really walk places near where they live and talk to their neighbors, and it feels very slow. It might have to do with people, drinking bourbon in the afternoon, like just kind of... It's a slow lifestyle. Also, it's a small city. Its global presence is large as far as music and art, but it's a very small city. So it feels kind of human scale to get around in. As I get older and go back to visit New Orleans, I happen upon art galleries that I didn't know about or places that I would want to go. It is feasible to happen upon a lot of art institutions or just places of interest, just kind of tucked away courtyards and interesting scenery. So that's one of the many things I love about New Orleans.
And how has it changed for you pre-post Katrina?
Oh, yeah, that's a big question. In New Orleans, Katrina is still so major. People are still talking about it. There's still houses empty, businesses closed, buildings closed because of Katrina. And so there's just a huge ripple effect. I know that there's been a big rebuilding and kind of a turnover where a lot of people did move away, but there's also been a lot of interest in people moving in or people coming back. So I've seen my own grandmother's house completely gutted. So and redone after Katrina. So that's kind of a physical connection that's more personal. My dad is from a very large family, 13 children in his family. So he has 12 siblings. So they grew up in what had been a convent with a bunch of tiny little bedrooms right across the street from a Catholic church that they attended. And it very much feels like this anachronism, like out of place in time, because it's this old house. I think it's late 1800s, maybe around 1900. So after Katrina, I saw my grandmother's house need to get completely gutted and redone, you know, just down to the complete baseboards and the foundation jacked up to repair. The house was completely sunken down on one side. And so that's only one example, but that same thing echoed a million times over is, you know, what happened to all the houses in the area. So it's major as far as a turning over. A different feeling is palpable there.
So given your New Orleans roots as well as your Atlanta upbringing, what is your sense of the South or the range of the South?
I know that the South often gets grouped together into this big lump of culture. But going to New Orleans and then back to Atlanta really drives home that there are major, major cultural differences that I think it's beneficial to appreciate those and maybe play off of them. A lot of people are in this kind of trying to take a look at Atlanta or analyze Atlanta and figure out what we are as far as arts and culture, because people come from everywhere else and live here. A lot of people aren't from here that live here. But I think that it's not something that we're becoming as far as arts or something that we have been. But I think it's nice to look at what we already are. That's a bit of a cliche, but really the cultural differences in Atlanta and New Orleans are already there. And I mean, I do enjoy that comparison, because even just having the contrast of a culture like New Orleans, that the world doesn't doubt what they're doing with art and music. The world already knows their own cultural stronghold. Atlanta is a big contrast to that. So by that mirror, we already are our really cohesive culture here.
Family. You mentioned that your father comes from a very large family, and I'm curious about the role that family plays in your art in any way.
Yes, that's a good question. I think that family to me is very major in how I make my artwork. I actually originally played around with bringing my voice recorder to visiting my uncles in New Orleans that have these really amazing accents. Well, obviously they don't think they have the accent, but so I would record stories that I heard that were really outlandish. Something about my, you know, the kind of tall tales that you're not sure if they're real or not. Something about an alligator getting killed and made into a belt or something like that. That's almost exaggerated, something told around a table. And liking to play around with my voice recorder eventually ended up leading me towards doing some performances and sound pieces where I would approach people on the street and ask if I could record them singing. I think that's a completely linear, natural outgrowth from an experience with my family. Also, I have a 7-year-old son who can often be found running around outside my studio while I'm trying to work. So I think the influence is everywhere, from family that's older than me and also my son and raising my own family.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about your son because I think there's a very, from what I've observed, very natural playfulness between you and him when I've seen the two of you together. So I wanted to get your perspective on how he has influenced your work.
Well, he's a funny little crazy man. I love to take him to openings and get what is to me sometimes the freshest perspective. A person who hasn't been around and around the art scene, perhaps, if I selectively take him to some openings and ask his opinion, you know, kids just respond on such a momentary, like visceral level. They just are kind of impulsive. And I used to teach preschool art a few years ago, and their minds are so much more geared towards conceptual art, I feel, at a younger age. And then we sort of water it down when we try and make them draw landscapes and self-portraits. You know, I loved this age of kids that I was teaching art. I was teaching art to 4-year-olds. And this one amazing little boy was really focused. I mean, for about an hour, just drawing individual dots on a piece of paper. And I asked him what he was doing, and he told me that each dot was representing a different thought that he had, and that he was trying to draw everything in the whole world on this piece of paper. So he showed me one dot, and he was like, this is my parents. This one over here is space. This is the Atlanta airport. This is my dog. And they all just looked like little dots on paper, but he just had completely the understanding that everything he could think about was right there on that paper. And that looseness of creativity is really inspiring. Of course, a lot of artists throughout art history have cited the imagination of children as an inspiration. But to me, it's just constant. I love showing a piece of art to maybe my son's friend who has somebody down the street or something, a little kid who's a neighbor who has seen even less art than my son has, because they're just the way they're so insightful. It's pretty amazing.
You also like to involve people in your work. Even with the Voice Box project that you did, that was one component of that. But I want to even go back to, what was it, the Cardio Glide?
Oh, yes.
Piece. What is it about making people a part of the art experience for you?
I love the nature of something being unpredictable. I try to create an experience with my artwork, and a lot of times it's not complete. It's not finished until people at an art show or wherever it is interact with the piece. The Cardio Glide piece specifically is an exercise machine that many might remember. The movement is sort of up and down. There's rather a bit of sexual innuendo with the way the exercise machine works, but that's a lot of exercise equipment. I had this almost like visual collage of people using this exercise machine and it hooking up to a kinetic sculpture as kind of an instant reward that is really over the top. Just like the sculpture was 60 feet long. So if you use the Cardio Glide, you send a wave movement down a sculpture attached to the ceiling that's 60 feet long. So that grew out of exercise videos and things, sort of an over congratulations, just kind of like, you're doing a good job, in a bit of a satire way, because getting on the exercise machine itself, it really puts you on the spot. But then there was another level to that, which was that a collaboration with my husband, Daniel, was that he created a computer program that would make the audio taken from a Jane Fonda lower body workout video, the audio hooked up to headphones that the Cardio Glide user could could hear was speed responsive. So it would speed up as the user sped up, and it would slow down or stop if the user of the exercise machine wasn't going fast enough. So while the sculpture overhead was kind of like constant positive attention, the earphones were able to provide possibly negative reinforcement, as if you were going sluggish, you would hear Jane Fonda sound like that. And so I'm still working out that piece. I don't know. I would love to show it again and have a little bit longer to work out the movement of the kinetic sculpture. It was kind of a quick up and down. But yes, I'm still working through that. I love the interactions people have with a kinetic sculpture that you move with your body. I think people who don't want to get on the sculpture and use it, are that interaction is just as interesting. I feel like group dynamics of people standing in a gallery come into play for who uses it for how long, who doesn't want to, who stands by documenting with their phone instead of engaging themselves. And not in an antagonistic way. I kind of find a little bit of beauty in all of those roles.
So even looking at a piece like that, and including your voice box work to any visual pieces that you create, how do you approach a new medium when it comes to working?
Well, I'm not really sure about that. It seems like the new medium usually just makes sense for what I'm trying to do. I'm actually working on a new sculpture that needs, as just a visual element, it really needs a person's like legs in the sculpture. And I was thinking for a really long while about how do I sculpt something so realistic, or do I not even go for realism on a person's legs? And I finally decided, it's this kind of foreshortened, like really stunted bed. And I finally decided, I literally need a person like laying in the bed. So I haven't done that before, where it's a collage with literally a person like laying there still in the sculpture. It's part of the sculpture. But I've realized a new medium happens like that. So usually it's that I want to accomplish something and I think of how to do it. And then the medium naturally follows.
Help me understand maybe who you were in school versus now. And I asked that from this perspective. When it comes to maybe taking chances or conceptualizing your work, are there things that you're able to do now that either just makes sense or you have a very clear way of how to go about it versus maybe who you were when you were in school? When you're in school, there's a teacher, things are graded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is important. I feel like it's really important to distinguish what happened in school and make sense of it. In school, I really was very process-oriented. Like, I wanted to touch all the materials because I didn't know what I would want to use. So I wanted to work with metal a lot. I took textiles classes. I took printmaking. I had to get extra clearances to take a lot of classes that weren't in the sculpture department because I wanted to do a lot of different things. And I think that was a bit of searching because it's hard to be in school and sometimes and be a purely conceptual artist where you're not just saying I'm doing ceramics, here's how you grade me, you know. In school I was lucky to have some really amazing professors that were very open-minded and very encouraging, including Ruth Stanford, who's still the head of the sculpture department at Georgia State, and George Beasley, who's like an Atlanta icon by now, pouring iron for his whole lifetime, practically. But in school, I found myself fulfilling assignments, but finding excuses to have these sort of alternative ways of interacting with people. I would take plaster casts of people's bodies, like my classmates or my family members, and I would turn out sculptures that had figurative forms in them. But what I was trying to get at was that the sculptures had a memory of this interaction, that maybe you can think about the bodies inside. But what I realized was that the interactions I was having were a lot more interesting than the final sculpture. So I had to get closer to how do I make conversations or experiences the central subject matter, as opposed to just having the experiences and casting them aside. Same thing happened when I made a sculptural piece and tended an edible garden in Hurt Park by Georgia State. I started writing down things that would happen to me there, because funny, weird things would happen to me. I thought I was going to maybe write a short story about how many times, like, a random man would come up and be like, I know you, or I know your twin, or like, hey, how you doing? And so it's just kind of, I mean, I talked to a homeless man who had been a farmer in Alabama who really took an interest in my tiny little garden, and he told me that he had come at night and killed this nightcrawler that was eating my collards, and he really had, which was amazing. And again, I was like, okay, I have this steel sculpture sitting there. I had a steel sculpture that was kind of like a line drawing of a figure. It was the actual sculpture that was sitting there in Hurt Park with this garden around it. But I realized that myself coming back there weekly or bi-weekly for about an entire year, making history with this place and meeting a lot of people there, was just the better part. It's kind of like my actual sculpture in steel was getting a little bit lackluster to me, myself, that I was watching it sort of be a lifeless object there, and I was realizing that I was better at doing this other part that was more like performance and recording actual experiences.
What is your approach, or what is your thought? When you're engaging people in your art, whether it's for a voice recording or making a mold of them in terms of a sculpture or something, how do you get people to get comfortable with what you're asking them to do?
That's a good question, because I feel like it changes all the time. I feel like the interesting thing about talking to, this is specific to maybe talking to a perfect stranger on the street, is kind of, I think that the only way to do that is to approach with complete honesty and, like, I'm trying to think of exactly how to describe it. It's like I have to feel really calm and earnest, I guess is the word. Like, I'm just trying to do this with the voice box recordings. It's like I approach somebody with a request, but why would they want to help me? Because they don't know me. And it's slightly, perhaps, embarrassing or unexpected to sing when you're walking down the street and you didn't expect to be doing that. So the only thing that is, I have to just make a genuine appeal. Like, I'm trying to do this project. I would really like it if you could help me by perhaps letting me record you singing. And a lot of times people just want to talk for a little while first. They want to know, are you an artist? A really common thing is like, are you getting paid for this? To which I'm glad to answer either no or not very well sometimes, because I don't want anybody to feel exploited. But it's just kind of starting that conversation. And then what I try to do, what my role in it is to try and give them a good experience in that moment also. I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable. So if somebody doesn't want to, I will talk to them if they want to talk, or I will let them go on their way if they want to go on their way. So I try and make sure everybody leaves there feeling like something happened, like they had an experience. And when I first did this project for Flux 2011, I was pretty amazed to see a lot. About half of the 20 people that I recorded, I ran into them at Flux. So they remembered the event and sought it out and came there to find the box that would be playing their song that I had recorded. So that was pretty amazing to me that it did work out. Like, it worked in the end, because it was just kind of an experiment that, you know, I left there feeling like, okay, that was pretty good. But I hope the other person thought so too. That's always the thing. I don't want to use anybody, any stranger on the street, as like a stepping stone to make a piece. I want to make sure they feel included. So I might be a little bit too nice about that kind of stuff, but that's just how I work.
When you're making your best work, when you're really feeling great about the work that you're making, what's happening around you in that moment? Like, what's the environment for you, whether it be personal, emotional, whatever, when you're making really great work?
Oh, I don't know. I think I'm always interested in talking to other artists about this. There's the problem with sustainability and feeling that you're making great work. I get really excited about ideas when they're new, but there's always the struggle of following through your own project. I tend to want to jump on to the next thing as soon as what I'm doing isn't new, but I'm working more on looking back and assessing maybe how something was finished or how I could have done it differently, or maybe continuing to make works that are similar to something I've already done if I haven't finished that thought. It takes some discipline. I feel like the joy comes just really early when an idea is exciting, and then it does tend to wear off. I've never looked at anything I've made and thought, like, how great. It's that I usually am just feel like moving on, and that's all it is. But it's actually easier to like a piece. It's easier to really, really fully appreciate somebody else's interaction with my piece. I don't know. I can feel detached from it. It feels like it isn't my own, even if it's a recording that I took. So there's that. I don't know. That's kind of nice. It's kind of liberating to look at my piece and also think about what somebody else did and that they're integral together. Integral together. It's kind of redundant, but you know what I mean.
Jane Garver, let all of our listeners know how they can find out more about your work.
I am on the internet at janegarver.com, and my son has told me that you are famous if you have your name on the internet. So we're all doing pretty well. janegarver.com or garver.jane@gmail.com.
Jane Garver, thank you for your time.
Thank you.